Hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. This is David Collins. We'll be talking about some great video game music. And we'll be talking, in fact, about a certain movie that really celebrated some independent video games. So, have a listen, and hope you enjoy. Hello again. So, in terms of video games, there have been a lot of movies. Not just like video game adaptation movies like Hollywood does, like Doom or Mortal Kombat, although there are a few of those, but also movies that explore various aspects of video game culture. I could be wrong, but the majority of these seem to be developed by independent enthusiasts, often crowdfunded, and to be honest, there's actually a fair nice selection of them. I believe there's Get Lamp, which I haven't watched, which deals with interactive text adventures, and there was also one dealing with the competitive scene regarding Donkey Kong, where basically King of Kong, I believe it was called, which was kind of like a competitive thing about two guys going up to get the highest score in Donkey Kong and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of movies about it. But in terms of making more games, or the current things, in 2012, indie game The Movie. Now, as I've mentioned in previous shows, around the end of the noughties, indie games, as in games developed by developers that were not part of major studios, became very, very popular. And of course, it turned out this wasn't actually a new thing at all, because back in the 80s, it was pretty much independent people who weren't part of any major game studio were the ones who were making most of the games. So it was kind of like, you know, independent people in their garages or basements making games, then corporations, and then corporations and independent people making games. But let's not get confused. The reason I'm finally talking about Indie Game the Movie is because recently another movie on a similar subject has been released, called Game Loading Rise of the Indies. Now, I haven't seen that movie yet either, but when I do, I'll probably wait another few years before giving my opinions on this, just like I'm doing with Indie Game the Movie. As I said, it was released in 2012, and it really captured a lot of things that were going on in the gaming at that time, specifically with new independent games. But without further ado, I'm going to dive right into the game soundtrack, because this is BitNote after all. It is a nice idea to play actual game music once in a while. Or at least, in this case, music from a documentary about video games. So, I'll start you off with Proof of Something, and by Jim Guthrie, and it's from Indie Game the Movie. Have a listen, and hope you enjoy. Thank you. And that was Proof of Something by Jim Guthrie from Indie Game the Movie. And Jim Guthrie has made this music and composed music for a lot of other short movies and such. So as I was, what happened to bring it about? Well, as I said, towards the end of the noughties, there was a lot more interest in independent games. Indie Game the Movie was basically the brainchild of two Canadian filmmakers called Jim Swirsky and Lisanna Pejot. They saw a lot of exciting things going around in indie game development at that time. They figured, "What? Let's make a movie about it, really try to elevate it at the time." And, you know, this was a pretty new thing. I mean, up to now, independent game developers hadn't really, like, made that many game hadn't really got much profile or much attention outside of gaming press. So having these filmmakers want to make a movie about them was pretty awesome and pretty genre-defying. Now, like I said, all indie game developers goes back a lot longer, but this was kind of a new resurgence. So they went around, they launched a Kickstarter trying to get funding, and I actually was one of the backers of it, which is nice enough, which means that I got the movie and ended up not watching it for ages. And then there was a lot of thing about how this movie would be, and they released some trailers, and a lot of people said, "Oh dear gosh, it's pretentious." And after releasing a trailer where a lot of people were like talking about that they're on the line and what do I do and what if things go thing and all this very atmospheric movie, then one comedy sketch group jumped in and recut the entire trailer as an action movie, which was pretty hilarious. Mega 64, they make a lot of these sort of sketch comedy things. But to go back to the movie itself, I finally had a chance to watch it, and it was kind of funny because it's kind of much of its time. It's talking about games that were released around that time period, and it's talking about the indie scene as it was, which was centered around a relatively small amount of people, whereas since then it's kind of exploded to the fact that if you go onto Steam, which is the major game platform, you can get flooded by indie developer titles by all these different sorts of people, and it's just insane about how many games they are out there. But back then it was still kind of small, and you know, then as it is now, there's still a couple of names that people know about, and that's what it was focusing on. And here I think is where it gets its first bit of tricky thing. You see, the I was expecting it to be pretty broad movie. In fact, they released a video ahead of the movie, which they said wasn't related to the movie, but it interviewed Derek Chung, and he was talking about Splunky, a game I've talked about on the show before. So I thought that, you know, at the very least, he'd be in the movie, but he isn't. In fact, only three developers are in the movie. One of the developers actually has two people in it, that's Team Meat. But you've basically got Jonathan Plow, who made Braid, I've talked about his game before. You've got Phil Fish, who made Fez. And you've got Team Meat, which is Edmund McMillan and Tommy Refnes. So they were kind of doing a past, present, future thing, given at the time that of the movie, Fez hadn't been released, and a lot of people were thinking that it wouldn't be released since it spent years in development, and the movie didn't exactly show Phil Fish in the most stable mental state. You had Team Meat, who were basically, they showed the process of them launching that. Of course, if you watched it after it all happened, you kind of had an idea of how it went, but still. And of course, Braid, which was the game that was released a while back, and they talked a bit about how that game came together. So it was kind of like a whole past, present, future thing, and that was nice. But I suppose the idea was they were trying to dig deep or, you know, focus their attention on these three rather than give a broader view. And I think that was kind of the problem, because it just, at the end of the movie, there's like a whole load of scenes of different games of different stages and upcoming games, the games that have been released and indie stuff. So it's showing there's a whole these exciting indie games out there, but the movie doesn't actually tackle that many indie games. And as for the ones it does tackle, well, I know, I'm just going to play another track and keep you in suspense about that little point. So here's Trust. It's also by Jim Guthrie from Indie Game the Movie. Have a listen and hope you enjoy. What they wanna hear.
even if you didn't have an audience. Lacking confidence. Oh no. Audience. Turbulence.
And that was Trust. As I said, it was by Jim Guthrie from Indie Game the Movie. Okay, so with Indie Game the Movie, as I said, it covers three games specifically, and look, I'll just go straight to it. It's extremely shallow. I mean, I suppose if you've never known anything about video games, it's actually not bad. You get to learn a couple of truths. You get to talk about how, like, a guy can prototype a game in a week, but it'll take several years to actually finish the game. You can learn a bit more about how, like, teammate Ed McMillan has some interesting things to talk about, like how basically you have to teach the player and, you know, gradually build a game mechanic so that it develops. And I mean, that's a very, very common technique. And it does talk a bit about the emotion. I mean, at some points it seems like these guys are kind of crazy. In a good way. Largely. Kind of. And it also kind of works that pretty much all three did kind of well. In terms of Braid, you've got him talking about his success. Fez did actually release kind of well. And Team Meat, it's we get to see how there's a lot of tension about how about them releasing an Xbox Live Arcade. And it's just, you know, it is true, because Xbox Live Arcade was a completely screwed up interface. And if they screwed you over and didn't show you that your game on the front page, you could pretty much get no hits. So, what exactly is my problem? The problem I have is that it's a good movie, but it's also very, very shallow. For instance, Phil Fish talks regularly about his business partner. He talks about how he doesn't like his business partner, how due to a legal dispute his business partner, or ex-business partner as he is now, could easily stop the games. He gets angry at his business partner. He says terrible things about his business partner and what he'll do if the business partner doesn't play ball. He says a lot of bad things about his business partner. Now, if you're kind of focused on what's going on at all, or even know anything about human behavior, you could sort of tell that Phil Fish isn't probably the most objective person in evaluating his business partner, for both obvious and non-obvious reasons. Clearly, there's been a lot of history going on. Clearly, there's something has gone on, but you're not exactly, you know, you wouldn't exactly take his word that, you know, it's all the business partner's fault, because you're thinking, looking at Phil Fish and going, you know, they are two sides to every issue. Fish has actually gone on to have a bit of a reputation as being kind of a jerk, and that actually is leading on to something I'll talk about later. But the point is, the movie never, and they had to actually edit the credits later to confirm this, never actually approached the business partner to have his say. It's all about focusing on the developers themselves. It's all about elevating them to a really high standard and just hearing their voice and listening raptly, and then not actually subjecting to any sort of critique or analysis or even opposing point of view, which is fine to some extent, but like I said, it just leaves it feeling shallow. We're given one point of view, one very emotive point of view, and it doesn't quite work. For instance, like I said, we don't even know exactly what the nature of the dispute is. We're not given any advice about how other indie developers could, like, deal with such business conflicts. We don't really even understand exactly what happened. We just see the emotion of Phil Fish reacting to the situation. But it's like the sound of one hand clapping. We see one side of an action that by its very definition has two sides. Then I move on to Jonathan Blow. Now, they do some really atmospheric, great stuff with this. There's one moment where Jonathan Blow talks about how people didn't quite get his game Braid, and it's like kind of emotion to us because it's like, you know, the misunderstood genius. And then there's like one shot of him silhouetted on he's on a skyscraper, and there's one shot of him with the city illuminated by sun in the background, but him silhouetted against, and it's a beautiful emotive shot. But at the same time, they don't quite tackle the thing as maybe no one got the game because it was extremely confusing and you made very little effort to actually help the player understand. Now, recently I saw a video that actually commented on Braid and said it's about regress and made thematic contacts, and that's all fine, but the game itself throws things completely out of order, throws several different competing narratives over what the heck is going on, and it seems like it takes a theme and then reverses it and redoes it over and over again, so the fact that people don't quite get his game is kind of understanding. Then, of course, there are actually points which really hit home, of course. I think Team Meat have a similar problem with their game Super Meat Boy, but it's actually kind of interesting. They spend 2 years working on their game Super Meat Boy, they release it, and they get rave reviews, but there's one really nice scene where the guy is looking at all the 9 out of 10s, 9.5 out of 10s in reviews, and I don't know, and people are saying it's a great platformer, fantastic, this is a breakdown of its features, and it kind of seems a bit listless and deadpan, one of the developers, and... You know, I kind of feel a bit for him, because I sort of know what it is. People are saying a lot of things, but it seems like activity rather than connection. But then he goes onto YouTube and finds people have recorded reaction videos to his game. Like, people are playing it and they laugh and they cry. They get pissed off whenever they die multiple times. And suddenly he's laughing. He's suddenly getting a reaction out of it. And they end up finding that some person has drawn fan art. And one of them is going, dude, I drew fan art of Super Mario Brothers. Now people are drawing fan art of our game. So it kind of shows that for all the bluster of games press and reviews and everything, some of the real value of a lot of these games is actually making a connection of people, and that's one of the things the game has. Now, I'm going to quickly move on to just one other track from the game movie, and I'll just chat a bit more then, a bit about what I think about the game movie in summary. Harsh Tags Part 1 by Jim Guthrie from Indie Game the Movie. So, what I want to talk about now is the legacy, because one of the benefits of being so late to the game is that I can look a little bit more about what Indie Game the Movie accomplished since then. Well, they did release a special edition with some extra interviews and stuff, and covered a few more games because they had some extra little interviews and such. But it's actually very interesting to look at the legacy. For one thing, we're meant to look at indie games developers, and one thing I know is that the term indie games, plural, developers, is almost slightly a bit of a misnomer given the actual people they actually interviewed. And this has only become slightly more apparent at time. Let's review. Jonathan Blow has... Well, actually, let's start with the basics. Edmund McMillan. Ed McMillen probably definitely earns his title. He's made a lot of games. Since Super Meat Boy, he's focused on The Binding of Isaac, which is his own game. And he's made plenty of games before then. I still actually prefer Gish as my favourite Ed McMillen game. So he's made a lot of games. He's going to make more games in the future. He sees it as a way to express himself. He's pretty awesome. The other two, well, Jonathan Blow spent a lot of time making Braid, and that was all okay. And then he said his next game was making was The Witness. Now, I loved actually Braid. I liked it more than the other games that were than FS and Super Meat Boy. So he goes on and he says he's developing The Witness. Remember that the movie was released in 2012, and essentially The Witness still has not yet been released. Now, the most recent news is that he's got a timed-limited exclusivity deal with Sony for the PlayStation 4 version of the game, but yeah, The Witness hasn't quite been released yet. Okay, that's sort of enough. But probably the most extreme case is actually... Now, just to be clear, Jonathan Blow had worked in game companies before then, but Braid was his first game he developed independently, so he's pretty much at this stage got one game to his name. Phil Fish with Fez was probably the most extreme example. It took 5 years to make his first game, which was Fez, which was well reviewed, although it kind of had its own things going with it. And then he announced Fez 2, and then he left the game development business forever. Now, why that is kind of a bit more of a complex sort of thing. Essentially, Phil Fish kind of had a reputation for being a bit of a jerk and kind of said things. And then the gaming journal media kind of picked up about and kind of like focused on this and kind of made him kind of a bit of a punching bag. I kind of hate to say it, but it was kind of true. It seemed like they were making the punching bag, and then came the final blow. Pretty much on some game journalism, like in online video, one of the guys talked about how Phil Fish wasn't actually giving him information about what it's like to be on Xbox Live Arcade, and then basically just attacked Phil Fish for effectively not giving him information for his news story. And then that on top of everything else, and I mean, it's not just the game thing. I mean, a lot of players got sick of his attitude and felt arrogant and annoying and stuff, so there was that too. But basically yelled out, screw this, I'm leaving the game business forever, Fez 2 is cancelled, and that was it. Boy. So, where does this leave us? Well, it leaves us with a movie that takes a nice look at sort of an era, that takes a kind of a shallow look at some game developers and the games that they were developing at that time in a very limited number, that went on to have careers that have stories attached to that at the very best, and I suppose continuing on the future. So, I mean, in retrospect, the fact that another group of people are making their own movie about indie games is kind of not surprising. But will it be as good or exciting, or will it be better than Indie Game the Movie? Well, wait for my opinion in a few years when I have not only had a chance to see the movie, but actually, you know, looked at its long-term impact. I can imagine that it will also evoke a mild sense of nostalgia just like this game movie has. So, I leave you now with Sympathetic Syntax by Jim Guthrie from Indie Game the Movie. Have a listen and hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you.